right, welcome back to Farm Talk. I'm Mick Kerr in the North Dakota Corn Grower Studio. And for the next half hour, we are going to talk soil health. Joe Brecker coming up. He's a no-tiller from down in Sargent County. Also got the Coteau de Prairie Lodge. And then we're heading up to the northeast corner of the state, where right now in Langdon, it's 39 degrees. Naeem Kalwar, soil science, soil health specialist up there at the Langdon REC. Did you step outside this afternoon and go, brr?
Yeah, Mick. We as a group went for lunch in Langdon, and it's quite chilly.
Yes, indeed. Well, you got all your soil sampling done. Is that something you do on a warmer day than this?
Yeah, I have done most of the soil sampling for the year from my research trials or demonstrations, but there's one activity I need to do. I also checked soil water infiltration.
Mm-hmm.
From our conventional till and no-till field demonstration chunks. But what happened at first, the guys were not able to do some field work and then kept raining enough to make the soils wet. So when they are wet, I cannot check the infiltration. You need the soil to be at field capacity or a little bit drier. And now we received more rain yesterday. The soils are wet. Again, I was hoping over the weekend soils will dry out a little bit so that I could get that work done. That's my last work for the year, but it seems like it's getting more difficult.
Just like farming, weather not very often cooperates. This has been a crazy year. I mean, some of the warmest temperatures we had were in early May and then regular rains and whatnot. The water infiltration is one thing. A healthy soil is obviously going to act like a sponge, and so. But you have you kind of dedicated your life up there in Cavalier County to sodicity and salinity issues, and let's talk about that, and then get to infiltration, water infiltration. How are we doing in the white spots on the field?
White spots would be more prominent in dry years, so that whitish look is the salt crust.
Mm-hmm.
And salts are a combination of chemical ions attracting each other with their positive and negative charges. You're going to see more white salt crust or less growth there in a dry year because salts compete with plant roots and seed for water. So in a dry year, that effect would be more prominent. In a wet year, when you keep getting decent showers, the availability of free water becomes a little bit better. So you might get some growth on those, some unproductive areas. So every year is kind of like different. But the white spots are still there. I will not consider this year a wet year. What we have been getting is, though, we get a little bit of rain enough to disrupt the field activities, but it's not like there's water standing for days.
Yeah, but the corners and the headlands, which are so famously white and probably more numerous in any other part of the state, northeast North Dakota, far northwest Minnesota, a little less of an issue this year?
I would say they were the issue because I don't think that we were really, really wet this year. I think we just kept getting rain showers. Say during planting time, you would think that the soils are ready for planting and people would be rearing to go, and then we'll get enough rain to disrupt the field activities.
Yeah. So what's the cure for getting rid of what Grandpa called the alkali spots?
Well, you need three basic things. Number one, what you need is good soil water infiltration, which is a function of good soil particle aggregation. When you have good aggregates or chunks of soil particles, you will get good structures, a soil structure. When you have good soil structure, that will lead to good pore space, especially the macro pores.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to have good soil particle aggregation, it's a function of chemical aggregation of soil particles and biological aggregation of soil particles. Chemical happens when you have ions like calcium, for example, way more than magnesium and sodium. And then biological aggregation happens when we add organic materials such as manure, green manure crops, cover crop biomass, which feeds the microbes. When they're breaking down the organic material, they release a lot of substances such as glumelin, which glues the soil particles together. So that's one thing. You will not get to good infiltration of soil water based on sand or other stuff. You also have good soil particle aggregation.
Both biological and chemical. So when we get the soil test results back from the lab, it's not just mm-hmm. that OM column. They don't have a chemical category, do they?
If you ask the labs to do those tests, they will do it for you, but you need to ask them. For example, if you want to know that the balance of the positively charged ions such as calcium and magnesium and sodium is good, and by that I mean like if the soil sample was analyzed using saturated paste extract method, calcium will always be 2 to 3 times higher than magnesium and 12 to 15 times higher than sodium. That's a good ratio mm-hmm. of these positively charged ions. And if you have calcium like that versus magnesium and sodium, you will have good chemical aggregation of soil particles. So I've seen a lot of these spots that do not produce anything. Mm-hmm. Their organic matter levels are decent. Their fertility levels are quite high because people, when they plant their seed, they apply fertilizer, but there are hardly any plants to grow there and take up those nutrients.
So what, again, and barley seems to mm-hmm. be the number one used plant to get rid of that problem. Is that still the case?
So, number one, you could have annual cash crops that will grow on highly saline areas, but they will not resolve, say, soil sodicity, which you mentioned at the beginning of the program. That sodicity issue happens when you have high levels of exchangeable sodium versus calcium. For that, you will have to apply soil amendments such as gypsum or beet lime or calcium chloride salt because they will add free calcium. So you want to raise your soil calcium levels versus sodium, for example.
Okay.
That's how you correct soil sodicity. But in terms of growing something which will grow, I personally think that we have better options than barley. In my research trials, I found oats to be a little bit more salt tolerant than barley. Sunflowers have come on top. One year we had those. Sugar beets last year performed very well compared to both barley and oats. So I would rate, if I have to rate crops for their annual cash crops, for their salt tolerance, I would rate sugar beets and sunflower, oats, and then barley.
Ah, interesting. All right. Well, that might be that's mm-hmm. news to me, and I'm maybe news to a few growers out there. Probably not news mm-hmm. to the sugar beet growers who know that they've got a great crop there. So,
yeah, and there are some varietal differences too, Mick. For example, I'll tell you about barley that in our trials here, 6-row barley varieties has done well on toughest spots where salinity and sodicity levels are high compared to the 2-row barley varieties.
Hmm.
Tradition, for example, is a shining star. Even though malting-wise, 2-row barleys are better, but when it comes to these toughest spots, 6-row barley, Tradition has consistently done better than the rest of the 2-row barley varieties.
Wow, interesting. All right, now it's time to give a report card. How are farmers doing up there in northeast North Dakota when it comes to, I guess, listening to you when you do your presentation at the annual field day or the winter meetings that you're so well attended when it comes to your soil health presentations? How are farmers doing when it comes to soil health?
Soil health is not something we could achieve in one day, but I think we are moving in the right direction. There's one concern I have, and through you, I want to communicate that to farmers that we have been losing a lot of topsoil, and we lose it in the winter too.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to change something, and tillage doesn't help. I understand, like Northeast, they want to dry their soils to plant early in the spring, for example. But in the fall, I personally think fall tillage may not be as necessary as we used to think. Because if you don't till in the fall, you save money, you don't loosen up the soil. So most probably you will not lose your topsoil in the winter. Come in spring, if you're a vet and if you need to make some tillage passes, control some weeds, you could still do it. I do not think that if you don't do tillage 100%, like if you don't go away from that, then you're doing something wrong. I think every step is in the right direction. So what I would say that we need to change something. The way we lose our topsoil, whether it's blowing away or it collects in the ditch, a roadside ditch, we're just losing it too fast and too much. So we got to change something. And it's up to the farmers to decide. I would say that soil health, even if you start doing all the practice perfectly, it might take you anywhere from 5 to 10 years to start seeing some positive changes. So it's a journey. It's not like, you know, you're going to see if you take a headache pill and you right away in 15 minutes you see the relief.
Yeah.
It's like taking the medicine of a naturopath where it takes a little bit of time. Every natural process takes some time. So I think they are mostly on the right track. And everybody needs to experiment with these soil health practices and find out the perfect practices for their farm on their own. We are here to help. We could tell them, we could share experiences of others, but I truly believe we humans, if we try to force other humans to push them towards something, that's not healthy, and people are not going to do it out of their free will. They need to.
Naeem, thank you very much for the visit.